Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. It's time for another Letter from Switzerland, in which we try to reflect Swiss life through our own eyes. Today's letter is written and presented by my American-Canadian friend, Aubrey Diem, from his home in the mountains of Canton Valley in southern Switzerland.
My experience with Swiss medicine goes back to 1954, when I entered the Geneva Cantonal Hospital to undergo a small operation. Since then, I have been a patient more frequently as my hair has turned from dark brown to silver. Recently, I spent 10 days at the hospital in Sion, the capital of Canton Valley in the Rhone Valley. This is a very old but also very beautiful town. It's surrounded by huge expanses of vineyards, and towering above it is the old cathedral, which features the world's oldest playable organ. You could call this an idyllic place, and if you're going to be hospitalized, then it might as well be here, or at least this is what I thought. I was there because of a painful problem that emerged just before Christmas. It affected my back, and the pain was unbearable. After cardiograms and scans, my heart appeared to be in good shape. However, the painful attacks would not go away and clouded my daily life. When they occurred, I was paralyzed and could do nothing except try and control the spasms. Finally, I called it quits and headed for the hospital at Sion, some 40 kilometers away from my home here in Zinal. Arriving in great distress, I finally convinced the attendants to ease the pain before writing down my medical history. Then they whisked me to Floor J, where all the cardiac patients were located. My heart had been checked and rechecked with nothing negative showing up. It was a sweet and sour experience. The care was good, almost too good. Frankly, I had the impression that it was even excessive. Blood was taken constantly, and the blood pressure and weight were measured daily. I was also being monitored continually by the computer. Except for one or two attacks of pain in my back, I was feeling well. About halfway during my stay, I was taken downstairs to a type of operating room, and shortly thereafter, a tube was inserted in one of my arms, and I saw it reach my heart on television. There were no commercials on this show. It is perhaps interesting to point out that this doctor was Greek and his assistant was Dutch, a reminder, perhaps, that Switzerland now has the largest foreign population in Europe and that there is a chronic shortage of Swiss medical personnel in this country. In any case, the operating doctor showed me two arteries that instead of being vertical, were lying horizontal. He quickly fixed this by inflating a tiny balloon and said that I could go home tomorrow. But Floor J did not send me home. Instead, I was held over the weekend for observation. They took off the wires that were attached to the computer, and I was even able to watch a couple of European Cup soccer games. The quality of care that I received was superb, and the staff was very friendly and helpful. But despite the fact that I was in this idyllic old town, I was annoyed by constant noise, especially the sound of helicopters coming and going. Since due to the difficult terrain of this canton, helicopters are used very frequently to transport emergency patients. All in all, my 10-day stay in the hospital was a success. I walked out of the building with no more excruciating attacks. My heart was okay. The main aspects were positive. However, the scars of my stay were evident. I was black and blue and yellow all over my body, and I felt like a Swiss cheese because of the many holes that punctured my skin. Oh well, as they say, no pain, no gain. At the end of the day, I am thankful to all those who made my hospital stay a success.
Thank you.
In addition to the newly produced material offered on the website and here on PCJ Media, we also feature some old vintage reports and features from the pre-Switzerland in Sound days. The information they contain may no longer be valid or up to date, but we present this material as a sound document for your listening pleasure. Here is one of those vintage items.
Welcome back. This is Bob Zanotti. Not much more than a decade ago, some wine lovers, especially here in Europe, would snicker at the mention of California wine, dismissing it as unfit for the connoisseur's palate. But times have changed. All of a sudden, we're hearing of wine-tasting competitions in France, the wine lover's Mecca, where judges have been giving top honors to California's product over their own wines. During my wine tour of California, I found a number of first and second generation Swiss who've been in the wine business for years and have made their own contributions, big and small, to the development of the California wine industry. What they've done, why they've done it, and what brought them to the United States in the first place is the subject of this program. But before we leave Swiss soil, let's get an independent view of the current state of California wines. Wolfram Martel of St. Gallen, eastern Switzerland, is a regular visitor to the California wine country. His father took a chance in 1965 and became the first importer of California wines in Switzerland, believing consistently in their potential quality and appeal. Wolfram Martel thinks the big moment has arrived.
There are quantity wines and there are quality wines. Also, the quantity wines from California, they have a very high standard. And the price is very interesting. But very few years ago, and mainly in the Napa Valley, they started with the quality wines, with wines in the high price category, which could also be a French wine. Even Baron Rothschild from Lafite Rothschild, the probably most famous French wine, he starts now to work with Robert Mondavi from Oakville in the Napa Valley. Well, all these famous winemakers, they have chosen the Napa Valley.
Wolfram Martel of St. Gallen, eastern Switzerland. And the Napa Valley is where we're off to right now. It lies roughly 50 miles north of San Francisco. High hills run along its entire length, harboring more than 24,000 acres of what's considered to be California's best and oldest vineyards. Perhaps the first thing to strike the European visitor is the almost bizarre appearance of palm trees intermingled with the foliage associated with the more conventional temperate climates, producing the outstanding wines of the Old World. But the palms are nature's testimony to the dependable warm climate, which leads many wine experts to claim that in the Napa Valley, every year is a vintage year. At St. Helena, the heart of the wine country, are several of the most famous of the region's more than 60 wineries. One of them is Beringer. Started in 1876, Beringer produces a range of varietal wines, including Chardonnay, Riesling, Fumé Blanc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Noir, and the most famous wine of California, Zinfandel. Today, Beringer is owned in part by the Nestle Company of Switzerland. Beringer president Dick Marr has this to say about working with Nestle.
From the business side, it's been very easy because they're really absentee landlords. They own the vineyards and the winery. We lease the winery from them and farm their vineyards. In return, we take the fruit and make it into wine, then market the wine. Our business is a young business. You know, let's face it, Prohibition went away in 1934, so we've really been making wine only some 40-some-odd years. One of the things that's needed to take us this way has been capital investment. The wine business, to make good quality wines, is quite capital intensive. And the new capital that some of these companies have brought into the industry, I think, has been very, very good for the industry.
But the Nestle Company is not Beringer's only Swiss connection. On their staff for the last 4.5 years has been Gérald Girardet. His is a winemaking family from Canton, Geneva in western Switzerland. Gerald wanted to see the United States, and he wanted to make a personal comparison between wine marketing practices there and back home.
Here, I think the business is more aggressive. I mean, you have to really be aggressive in order to sell something. It be shoelaces or wine, you have to be aggressive. In Switzerland, we sell wine without being aggressive.
How would you describe the quality of California wines and the traditions, the ways of making them compared to what you've known?
The quality of the wines are in California is very good. We have more traditions in Europe and in Switzerland, since we're talking about Switzerland. We have much more traditions and many more years experience behind us, and that could be a disadvantage. For example, in the United States and in the Napa Valley, we're not bound by these traditions. We can use advanced technology to compensate a little bit that tradition, and we're not bound by traditions.
Geneva winemaker Gérald Girardet on his 4.5 year stay with the Beringer Winery of St. Helena. About 20 minutes or so north by car is the town of Calistoga. This is the home of the Cuvaison Winery, with a Swiss connection through and through. Cuvaison is owned by a prominent Swiss family and is managed, among others, by two Swiss with quite different stories behind them. Christoph Weber, Cuvaison financial controller, left his native town of St. Gallen in eastern Switzerland in 1961. He's been in California and the wine industry for the better part of that time ever since. What made him leave Switzerland?
Well, I think it was basically a matter of getting to know the American way of doing business, and my intention was to come over to the States for about a year or two, learn everything that there is to learn about American business, and then go back and get a good job in Switzerland. But it didn't work out that way, and I'm still here.
Now, what kept you on?
Well, I got married to an American wife, and that was one reason why I stayed here. But on the other hand, it is also nice to know that you can set roots somewhere, and I think I've done this in the Napa Valley, because I don't intend to leave this beautiful place again and try to stay in the wine business.
Now, Mr. Weber, you have an American wife, as you said, but you also have two children, I think, and that makes them Swiss officially as well as American. Have you made an effort to keep them in touch culturally with Switzerland?
We try to raise our children in a traditional way. I think the European influence is there, and we try to keep in touch with my brothers. I have a brother who lives in Mensiken. He's got three children, and we are definitely trying to get the children spending vacations. Either they come over here or we send our children over there and keep in touch that way.
But do you make an effort to get together with other Swiss known to you living in this area? Do you try to keep contacts up with your countrymen?
No, I'm afraid to say I don't. There are not too many Swiss people up here, first generation. There's one person in St. Helena. He's the baker, the local baker, makes good Swiss bread. And he grew up about 15 miles from where I grew up. We see each other from time to time, but other than that, I don't have any real contacts with the Swiss consulate or the Swiss colony in San Francisco.
So it's a personal choice, then. You're here on your own, and you'd like your independence and your freedom, if you like. Freedom from interference by other people.
That's right, yes.
Now, that's a sound common to just about every winery you can visit. In this case, though, it's the bottling room at Cuvaison after the aged wines have been okayed by Philippe Tognier, president and winemaker of the company. Philippe Tognier's story is not exactly straightforward. He was born in England of Italian-Swiss parents. He studied geology and went to South America. He decided that wasn't for him, so he took up the study of winemaking in France at the age of 27. After considerable research in France and having worked for some of the most prestigious winehouses of that country, he found his way to the Napa Valley, and he's been there for 25 years. Philippe Tognier has made a name for himself among California wine circles for his marriage of American technology and old world tradition, resulting in the production of only three top quality wines, Cabernet, Zinfandel, and Chardonnay. But changing vocations in midstream is not an everyday occurrence, at least not for a Swiss. His reason could almost be described as romantic.
Viticulture, of course, is the most attractive farming that I believe there can be in the world, because you don't sell grapes, or you should not sell grapes by the ton and see them disappear down the road at the end of your year's effort. If you plan it right, you crush them yourself. You turn them into something which doesn't die or get boiled like cabbages and eaten up at the end of the first week. It may go on and outlive you. And this has always been an attractive aspect to a lot of people, and that includes me.
Do you feel Swiss at all, regardless of the passport? Or are you just too far away from the old world and the country of origin?
I think there are people here, and I've met them, dairy farmers, who do feel very remote. For its worth, I have been going to Switzerland since I was the year I was born, every second or third year for a vacation. And since 1963, I think I've been there every year. I've gone largely to keep contact with my family, it's true, but this may sound a bit sentimental, but also to keep contact with the terrain. We run up a Swiss flag every now and then. We have a little meadow which I have attempted to irrigate to turn into a Swiss pasture, but we're running out of water in California. We don't have a Swiss library. We don't have any Swiss wine, I'm afraid, although they keep telling me that the Merlot del Ticino is in a category along with California Merlot. I didn't want to be flippant, but we do like Swiss chocolate.
Well, there you have a Swiss winemaker with a sense of humor. Philippe Tognier of the Cuvaison Winery of Calistoga, California. It takes a good hour of driving through the Napa Valley vineyards to reach Asti. There is located Italian-Swiss colony. In fact, there's probably no American who hasn't at least heard the name, even if he's not a wine drinker. When you arrive in Asti, you'll have little trouble finding the colony. It's just about the only thing in town, save a small but good restaurant and an automobile service station. Asti may not be the center of the universe, but it's still in all is home to California's second largest volume producer of wine. And as Italian-Swiss colony's Roger Bolin explains, it has an interesting history.
In the 1870s and up through 1881, when the colony was founded, there was an awful lot of unemployed immigrant Italian and Swiss, and there was no industry yet in the area, and they all had, or most of them had agricultural backgrounds, and a lot of them had viticulture, grew grapes in their home areas. And the colony was formed to find a source of employment for these people. The founder was an Italian gentleman named Andrea Sabarbaro. So the colony then became a corporation and employing Italian and Swiss migrant workers of agricultural backgrounds. It was formed as a corporation in 1881. By 1892, they were winning gold medals in Europe for their product. Hard-working people. I mean, this was a barren land, actually, when they came in here. The first two or three years of the colony was disaster. They had one year where their entire vineyards were eaten by a flock of sheep one night, and a couple of years of pests, locusts, and droughts, and things like this. But they stayed with it and became very, very successful.
As a matter of fact, if we look more closely at the very first year of Italian-Swiss colony's existence, Roger Bolin's reference to the hard-working nature of the founders seems like an understatement. At the age of 28, Tom Eddy is something of a winemaking prodigy. He's responsible for the Asti Winery's annual turnout of 2 million cases. He's also well-versed in the technical side of the colony's history.
In fact, their first year at the colony was a disaster because basically they were without a winemaker. They were a group of very industrious people, but lacked the chemical skills, the understanding of wine chemistry to do an excellent job. And of course, the first year they made some excellent vinegar. But realizing their mistakes, they proceeded ahead. In the second year, they brought in a chemist from San Francisco, and he was very successful. At that time, in the early 1900s, the Italian-Swiss agricultural colony was considered one of the most technologically advanced wineries in the state. And I have to say that in the ensuing 30 to 40 years, they continued to be an aggressor from a technical end.
Are any of the old vines still surviving, still producing even?
Yes, we have about 10 or 12 acres of the original plot. The Sangiovese, one of the original plots, it goes into our old Tipo Chianti blend, which is still around. And, of course, the Italians and Swiss among us that enjoy that kind of style still drink it.
After saying goodbye to Tom Eddy, Roger Bolin and I went on a tour of the colony's technical installation, which, like other wineries in Napa Valley, is well visited by tourists. We arrived at the blending room, full of hardware, new and old. Mr. Bolin explained what was going on.
Well, as you saw as we walked through the winery itself, the wine is stored in smaller containers than what we have here. And when we're ready to bottle a wine, the winemaker, through chemical analysis in small portion, has determined what the blend of wines will be to go into, say, a Burgundy. And so we have a tank here. The one in front of you, this is a redwood tank.
This is hard to believe. I'm sorry. You better read off that number very carefully.
72,423 gallons. I love to bring tourists here because of the idea of this beautiful old, and this is an area 50 years old, this tank, beautiful old redwood tank, and right in front of it, this big bank of computer lights flashing, which control the flow of the wine, where it's coming from, blending and pumping out for filtering, and on into the bottling line.
So the best of both worlds, then.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
And at that point, it was time to leave the Napa Valley and travel about 125 miles to Hollister, which is another principal California wine-growing area southeast of San Francisco. It'll be hard to forget the instructions I got. Go through town, make a left turn, then a right, drive about 20 miles, and when you think you've made a wrong turn somewhere, continue till you get to Limestone Road, and there you are. Where? Well, at the 10,000-acre ranch of Robert Entz. This is a family wine business reminiscent of the small but high-quality wineries of Switzerland or France. Annual production is 10,000 cases, almost all consumed in California itself. Bob Entz specializes in uncommon but prize-winning wine varieties, including the Chasselas, which is the white wine grape of Switzerland. Bob is a first-generation Swiss-American. His Zurich father was an engineer sent to the United States on hydroelectric projects. He decided to settle in California. Bob Entz also studied civil engineering, and as he told me, his entrance into the wine business was accidental.
Actually, my father did not get into the wine business. I myself and my family have, by buying this ranch several years ago building the winery. The vineyards were here when we bought the ranch, and actually being in the engineering business myself, we built the winery and got started that way. I would think that the Swiss didn't get into the wine business primarily. In this county, there are quite a few Swiss of first, second generation, and I know several that are in the cattle business. Which have large ranches. They have large ranches around here, and there's quite a Swiss organization in Monterey County where they get together quite often to have picnics and so forth.
And what about in your own case? Do you feel totally American or partly Swiss?
We're very partial to Switzerland, yes, but living in America, we feel we're totally American. However, we always reflect back to Switzerland, and I have many first cousins still living around Zurich. We go over there often to visit, so there's a good interchange of thought and good rapport with the Swiss.
Now, if we can turn for a minute to the wine production here. Of course, the question that has to be asked here is whether your Chasselas whites resemble Swiss whites. Of course, the Chasselas being the principal grape of Switzerland, and I would imagine that to a certain extent the climate might be similar here.
I think the climate is very similar to some western regions of Switzerland. And when we were back in Switzerland and tasting Chasselas, or Fendant from different areas in Switzerland, the grape tasted quite similar, and we have many European customers who think the our Chasselas resembles the Swiss Chasselas very much so, and might be even better.
So it looks like when you decide to make a cheese fondue here, you have just the right wine for it. If you have that raclette, you don't have to go searching for the right wine.
Well, that's very true, yes.
Robert Entz of Hollister, California. Our final destination is Fremont, not far from San Jose, southeast of San Francisco. In the 1930s, a man by the name of Weibel, a winemaker from right here in Bern, went to the United States to try to sell Swiss wines. After several trips, he decided that winemaking in California held a more promising future. Pretty far-sighted, considering that Prohibition was just ending in the United States. Fred Weibel Sr., or as it comes out on the American tongue, Weibel, was 18 years old at the time. The family started up a winery in San Francisco with a capital of $5,000 and an annual production of 22,000 cases. Today, Weibel puts in an 18-hour production day, bottling its traditional specialty of sparkling wines made in the Champagne tradition, as well as red and white table wines. Weibel is considered one of the big names in California wines and is known throughout the United States. In this program, I've tried to synthesize two different subjects, really, the Swiss in California and what they've contributed in their own way to the California wine industry. But in making a selection of the final words in this program to exemplify what I felt was the dominant feeling of the California Swiss I met, in terms of their reasons for emigrating and staying in California, as well as their relations to Switzerland, I've chosen those of Fred Weibel.
There's no way a man born in Switzerland could ever feel detached. I don't think it's possible. I don't know. Maybe it is. However, I do feel that I belong here. I want to be here. I wouldn't for all the tea in China consider changing back, going back to any place in Europe for that matter. I love the country. I love the wide open spaces, the room. I would like to jump in my car at the drop of a hat without considering whether I have a passport on me or identification or anything else. If I want to drive 100 miles or 5,000 or 2,000, I'm accustomed to that, and I feel hemmed in. The minute I get to Europe, I feel like I'm closed in, locked in.
Do you think you're speaking for the majority of Swiss who have settled in California?
I would expect so. I've known a lot of Swiss that have been here for 20, 30, 40 years and decided I'm going to retire and go back to Switzerland. 9 out of 10 are back within 2 years. At least 9 out of 10 of my past friends have been back in 2 years.
Fred Weibel Sr., president of the Weibel Winery of Fremont, California. The Swiss and their contribution to the California wine industry. My sincere thanks go to all those who took part and to their companies.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.